Civilians in the war-torn nation of the DR Congo are on the receiving end of killings, widespread rape, displacement from their homes, looting, forced labour and arbitrary arrest. According to the UN and rights groups, these are some of the ongoing human rights violations threatening non-combatants in the volatile eastern areas of the DR Congo. The reports speak of more than 1,000 civilians having been killed and nearly 900,000 displaced in North and South Kivu province during fighting between militiamen and Congolese forces since January. The widespread use of rape as a weapon of war means the conflict zone is an increasingly dangerous place for women. The UN says some 5,400 women have reported being raped this year in South Kivu province alone. But experts say the real number is certain to be far higher. Nicolas Doronsoro is a Spanish humanitarian worker for Jesuit Refugee Services, who has been based in the DR Congo for the past 3 years. He told me more about the current situation in the conflict zones of the country.
Well, I would say that even though the situation in most of the country has improved after the elections that took place in 2005, unfortunately, there hasn't been big improvements in North Kivu and South Kivu because perhaps the international community was expecting that democracy and free elections were going to be a kind of miracle that would wipe and give a solution for all the problems. But unfortunately, insecurity, impunity, and mainly poor governance and the fact that Congo is a kind of a failed state in the sense that the government in Kinshasa doesn't have the rule.
The power to
make sure that the security of the citizens is guaranteed in North Kivu and South Kivu and also up North Kivu means that the situation for many people, many IDPs, remains the same it was since 1991.
What are the worst human rights violations that you were coming across or have been seeing during your time there?
Well, we have been working with IDPs in IDP camps, and all these people arrive to the IDP camps because they fear for their lives. They have to escape because of the insecurity in their places of origin. And they escape mainly because of the climate of impunity. This is to say that there are many armed groups, the military of the Congo, but also many armed groups that do rule and do basically whatever they want in terms of looting, raping many women and creating havoc on a systematic basis, knowing that they are not going to be sent to court and trial for what they are doing. And this climate of knowing that you can do whatever you want, knowing that nothing is going to happen to you, makes this situation eternal. So one of the big things that have to be tackled and changed in Congo for good, if we want the situation to change, is the reform of the justice sector.
Because there's simply nobody being punished for these crimes.
Yeah, in fact, the laws exist, and when you read the laws, they sound very good. The problem is that the system that should apply these laws does not exist and is very corrupt. Corruption that you see in many of the strata of the society, not only in politicians. It's one of the issues that Hillary Clinton, when she visited recently the region, pointed out rightly, the importance of good governance if you want the country to evolve.
You talked about human rights violations, including rape. Rape, of course, a lot has been said about the massive use of rape as a weapon of war by all the armed groups operating in the DR Congo. Do you come across many women and girls yourself who have been affected either directly or indirectly by this? Is it very pervasive?
Yes. What I say to my friends is that if you stay in Congo for a year, it is almost impossible not to become a feminist because you see the situation of women in Congo. So.
Oppressed.
Women oppressed, that's a term. Women have no rights, so they are supposed to work from day to night. In the rural areas, you see many men that mainly do nothing, and the women are in charge of doing almost everything. And about the issue of domestic violence, which is a big issue in Congo, you have all this situation of rape that gets not punished. So many women go through this, and the problem is also that when you think about rape, we can think about rape in Spain, where I come from. And if someone is raped in my family, for example, the first reaction of the people in my family will be to care for this person and help her recover. But unfortunately, what you see in Congo is that when this happens, women are rejected by the family.
They're ostracized.
Yeah. They are stigmatized. And this has created organizations that help these women to go on through this difficult situation.
And how difficult and dangerous is it for you as a humanitarian worker to operate in this area, and indeed all the other humanitarian workers? Can you give us some examples of the dangers you run across, the risks you have to take?
Well, we take risks, but those who really take risks are the people that are living there. We as expats try to do our job in the best way they can, but we work wherever there's a minimum of security to work. The problem is that in North Kivu and South Kivu, there are many IDPs placed in areas where there is no access because of this constant insecurity. We have been working in Goma, for example, because it is a place where we can say that if we draw a line in the map, we're just behind this line where security is enough good to work. But it's at the other side of this line of security where there are many people that sometimes you cannot access. And sometimes working there means putting your life in real danger.
Can you give us a concrete example?
Well, I cannot talk about Congo. I can remember about when I was working in Burundi. We worked in Burundi for 3 years. There was a lot of criminality in the city. And I remember one Sunday we were we were having mass in our house, and there was a group of 5 armed men that came into the house with Kalashnikovs and with guns, and they asked for our money, and they told us they were going to kill us. It was 45 minutes of not a very pleasant situation. It's something that sometimes you have to face when you're there.
I know there are over a million people displaced, mostly within the borders of the DR Congo, but some in neighbouring countries as well. How vast are the humanitarian needs of these people, and how well are those needs being met?
The humanitarian needs are enormous, and the problem, in fact, is that we do not react to the dimension of this conflict, unfortunately, because I think that we don't talk enough about what is going on in Congo. I remember Jan Egeland, who was the assistant of the Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs at the time, trying to raise consciousness about the deep of the problem in Congo by saying that there was a tsunami taking place in Congo every 6 months. And that tells quite well about how the situation in Congo was. It has improved. Now in North Kivu and South Kivu, the situation is better, but there are many IDPs, people who we cannot access to, and the needs are great. But unfortunately, it's a conflict that doesn't appear enough in the media.
I was speaking to Nicholas Doransoro of Jesuit Refugee Services.